current state for Friday, April 12th. I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back. An attempt to repeal Michigan's new pension tax has been delayed in the state Senate until at least late in the year, and effectively probably until next year at the earliest. Democrats have complained that the pension tax is unfair, in part because it upends retirement planning for people who were counting on not having to pay taxes on that income, who were accustomed in the past not having to pay taxes on it. Republicans, like Senate Appropriations Committee Chair Roger Kahn, counter that it's hardly unfair to treat pensions, 401ks, and other retirement accounts basically the same. We've kept an eye on this issue on Current State in part because at least two mid-Michigan Republican senators support the repeal. They are amongst a handful of Republicans who do support the repeal, Rick Jones and Joe Hune, east of Gretchen Whitmer's district and west of Gretchen Whitmer's district, both Republicans. They are among some number on the right who support it. Which made it something of an anomaly, I guess, but it is dead now until at least December 28th. Make of that what you will. We've got an interesting show here for you today. Later on, we're going to be talking about the Capital City Film Festival, which is always fun. That's coming up. But first, since the tragedy at Sandy Hook Elementary last December, the debate over gun violence and stricter gun controls has earned greater attention, including in our nation's capital, where the Senate is about to take up discussion of new legislation. Tomorrow at our state capitol here in Lansing, there will be a rally organized by Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And with us now to talk more about gun violence and tomorrow's rally, Shannon Watts, the founder of Moms Demand Action. She joins us by phone from Indianapolis. Hi, Shannon.
Good morning.
And with us here in the studio, Linda Brundage, the founder of the Lansing Mid-Michigan chapter of Moms Demand Action. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Mark.
Nice to have you back. And Kelly Grandchamp, who is a survivor of gun violence. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning, Mark.
And thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Shannon, update us on Moms Demand Action. Your group hasn't been in existence that long. It started very modestly with a Facebook page. How's it been going since December?
Pretty amazing. In 4 months, we have almost 100,000 members and 90 chapters across the country in 40 states. So, you know, this obviously touched a nerve with moms in this country. They were looking for a way to get involved in the issue of gun violence locally, and now Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America is giving them that.
Linda, you helped start the Mid-Michigan chapter here. You were on our show a couple of months ago. How has it gone since your last appearance?
Well, it's going very well. And to use the word excited to describe a gun sense rally is probably not the best word. But we know we have an excellent rally planned for tomorrow. The response across the state has been excellent. People, moms, are ready for change regarding the way the issue of guns is dealt with in our country.
Is your group, by and large, I know you've got a big rally planned tomorrow,
yes.
And
yes.
You're very hopeful of a big turnout. Is your organization largely an online kind of phenomena, or do you hold meetings where as many people come together and plan and discuss, or what?
Both. There's a huge online presence. You can go to momsdemandaction.org. That's our national website. Then there are five chapters in Michigan. And here in mid-Michigan, we've had probably 10 to 15 people meeting regularly. Of course, our focus has been on getting ready for the rally. But I want, when people think of Moms Demand Action, I want them to think of mama bears protecting their cubs. And this isn't a today or tomorrow. This is for the marathon, for the duration. We're not going away regardless of how successful our rally is. In a way, I'm thinking of our rally as the kicking off point to give a voice to the middle ground. We're not extreme on either end. We're grassroots. We're not partisan. We get the Second Amendment. So we're trying to give voice to those moms who want to protect their children, their communities, and their state.
Shannon, there are other organizations that have been working on gun control for many years. What do you think people find so different about your organization?
Well, you know, what we hear over and over again is that moms have been a missing voice in this conversation for almost three decades. Much like Mothers Against Drunk Driving was founded in the 1980s to address driving while intoxicated, we have needed an organization in this country to address our gun laws, not just at a federal congressional level, but also at the local state level. Okay. Laws are routinely made by state legislatures that are driven by gun lobbyists. And so for moms to be able to get involved, not just online, but we're able to take that online interaction and translate it to offline activism. And so, mm-hmm. You know, what we're seeing is that we have been a missing voice in this conversation, but Sandy Hook Elementary, you know, the massacre there really mobilized us to come together and say, oh, we didn't realize the gun laws were so lax in our country. We understand that now, and we're going to act to protect our children.
Linda Brundage, did Sandy Hook particularly resonate with you then?
Yes, it did. I think, you know, similar to what Gabby Giffords and many other people, moms, have said, enough is enough. And I said to myself, Linda, you've got to do something. You've got to get active. And to just piggyback on something that Shannon said, locally we've been very active, meeting with some of our state representatives, some of our state senators, and we do expect change in the laws in Michigan that would move toward protecting our children and communities.
Regardless of what happens in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, because, you know, there's been a law introduced in Michigan that would exempt firearms manufacturers, for instance, in Michigan, from complying with the federal laws.
Right.
We're not going to stand for that. We don't want those guns made here.
And you're confident you've got the support to actually prevent that from happening?
I think we have the ability to develop the support. If the last few weeks is any example, again, there are lots and lots and lots of moms, many more than there are gun owners, and we have the determination. We know it's a marathon. We know it's not a sprint, and we are here. Moms aren't going away, and moms vote.
For you, Kelly Grandchamp, you have personal reasons to be involved in this. You're a victim of gun violence. Would you mind sharing your story with us?
Yes, I am a survivor of gun violence. In 2001, a man that I was trying to divorce in an incident of domestic violence came to my house and shot me twice in the head.
That doesn't sound like it's got a very high rate of twice in the head. And you are here,
yes,
today,
yes,
to talk about it. That sounds like some kind of medical miracle. Here.
They did tell me that they really didn't know why I survived. And although the impact on my life was huge, I managed to turn it into something positive.
How so?
Because I was awarded Social Security disability due to the gun violence, I used that opportunity to go back to school and get my master's degree in social work. So now I help women and children who are suffering under the yoke of domestic violence.
Wow. After going through what you went through, what is your current relationship with guns and with people who support gun rights, etc.?
I own guns. I shoot guns.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. And so guns have always been a part of your life, but you became a victim of gun violence.
Yes. The gun that was used on me was not my gun. However, I really want to point out that when I do use guns, it is with gun safety. I do not own any automatic guns, and I have no illegal guns.
What was it like picking up a gun the first time after you were attacked?
It was scary and horrific.
So there was a profound impact with your own relationship with guns after the attack on you. This took a while to warm back up to the whole idea of shooting guns. But now they are a part of your life again.
Yes.
Okay. And your current husband uses guns, I'm led to believe?
He does. He is not retired, but has served our country, has been a military man. He is also raised in a household where hunting was a part of provision for the family. So, yes, we enjoyed the sport together.
Do you feel that a lot of other victims of gun violence are joining your cause?
I do.
Okay. You've spoken to other people who will be at the rally tomorrow who are victims like you. You are survivors like you are.
I have not spoken to anyone in particular, but I know that anyone with a common sense approach understands that.
Shannon, how many people are there like Kelly that you're aware of?
There are actually many. We know that we have at least 300 members of the NRA who have joined our organization. We hear a lot from women and men who are gun owners, but frankly who have also left the NRA because they don't like the future that Wayne LaPierre has laid out, where we have shields over our schools and bulletproof backpacks and the good guys shoot it out with the bad guys over our kids' heads. You know, the reality is we support the Second Amendment, and mm-hmm. you can have common sense, you can own a gun, and also understand that people don't need assault weapons. People should have to get background checks for every single purchase. People should have to report large quantities of ammunition to the ATF. These are just common sense reforms that we're talking about.
You are also, let's be clear, you've enunciated a couple of your positions. You believe in a ban on assault weapons and ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. You mentioned the background checks, the large quantities of ammo. You support making gun trafficking a federal crime with serious criminal penalties, and you also want to counter the gun industry's lobbyists' efforts to weaken gun laws at the state level. I have to ask you about what's going on in Washington, though. The Senate voted yesterday to proceed with debate on a package of bills that would expand background checks for gun buyers and increase the penalties for criminal sales. And it's got a lot of other amendments attached to it. And I think a discussion is about to begin. But they do include the renewal of the assault weapons ban that expired 9 years ago. And Shannon, any response to this development?
Yeah, we were thrilled, first of all, that many mm-hmm. senators crossed the aisle to block a filibuster and to allow debate on this legislation. That's what America's about. It's about an open debate and people being transparent about what their votes are going to be on this legislation. 90% of Americans want background checks, and almost 60% want an assault weapons ban. So, you know, we deserve a vote. The victims of Sandy Hook and other gun violence incidents deserve a vote on this. And, you know, as we move forward, this is not a perfect bill. It's a good start. And, you know, we're hopeful. It's certainly a long road, so the Senate has to vote for it, then it goes to the House, and then back to the Senate. That's a lot of work and heavy lifting that needs to be done. I think we'd like to see, you know, something important passed this session to show legislators the sky won't fall if you vote for common sense gun reforms. And then we'll go back again and again until all of our goals are accomplished at both the federal and state levels.
Linda, tell us about what's planned at tomorrow's rally, please.
Tomorrow we're going to have Mayor Virge Bonero is going to welcome, to the Capital City. And Virge is also a mayor against illegal guns, so he will say a word about the activity of the mayors in our state. You've met Kelly. She's going to speak. We have a pediatric emergency room physician. We have a couple of educators. One of the educators will have a particularly interesting voice. He is a father, an educator, and a gun owner for 40 years, and he's going to talk about guns from his gun-owning perspective. We're going to have a couple of students.
At the Capitol?
Capitol
Grounds. Okay.
Capitol Grounds, 11 a.m., doesn't matter what the weather. If somebody is thinking about, oh, I can't go out in the weather, I want to encourage them to think about what the families of gun violence have experienced, And so what's a few wet shirts or wet toes? The rally will go on. So try and think about your activity tomorrow in terms of getting a voice out for gun sense.
Shannon, now that the weather, the seasons are changing, are you finding that there are more events like this one being planned around the country?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've been rallying since December 14th. We've held more than 30 events across the country, and it was a cold, long winter. So we are looking very forward to spring weather, and, you know, the NRA has talked about the Connecticut effect being that people will forget about this. We think it's the exact opposite. We believe the Connecticut effect is about rallying and mobilizing mothers across this country, and we will never forget, and we will keep having events until something gets done.
Sandy Hook was a horrid day in our country's history. A lot of people who are resisting change claim that even the passage of some of the measures in this bill that the Senate is looking at, involving background checks and the like, would not stop another Sandy Hook. Shannon, what do you make of that assertion? How do you respond to that?
Well, that's absolutely false. You know, the reality is that he used an AR-15 at Sandy Hook, and that's a weapon that would be banned. He used a 30-round magazine. You know, 11 kids were able to flee when he stopped to reload his magazine. So, you know, he's also obviously was mentally ill, and should his mother have had a gun in the house with a mentally ill child there? There are all kinds of steps that need to be taken so that this is prevented. Will this stop every single horrible crime in this country? No, absolutely not. But neither do stop signs. But we don't say, well, you know, people just aren't going to follow the rules, so we'll just take away all the stop signs. We have to, as a country, put laws in effect that will do the very best to even save one child's life. That is our obligation as human beings.
What do you make of the argument in favor of training a person or persons in schools to protect innocents from a gun-wielding person? Shannon, Linda, anybody?
In Michigan, we do not want guns in our schools. The Michigan Education Association is very clear on that. The American Federation of Teachers has made a very clear statement, as has the National Education Association. Guns do not belong in schools, period.
Shannon Watts is the founder of Moms Demand Action. She has joined us on the phone from Indianapolis. We also want to thank Linda Brundage, the founder of the Lansing Mid-Michigan chapter of Moms Demand Action, and Kelly Grandchamp. Many thanks for coming in today. She is a survivor of gun violence. Good luck at the rally tomorrow. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now it's time for another public poetry announcement brought to you by MSU's Center for Poetry.
Root Cellar by Theodore Retke. Nothing would sleep in that cellar. Dank as a ditch. Bulbs broke out of boxes hunting for chinks in the dark. Shoots dangled and drooped, lolling obscenely from mildewed crates. Hung down long yellow evil necks like tropical snakes. And what a congress of stinks! Roots ripe as old bait, pulpy stems rank, silo rich, leaf mold, manure, lime piled against slippery planks. Nothing would give up life. Even the dirt kept breathing a small breath. Root Cellar by Theodore Retke. I'm David Clausen, and this public poetry announcement was brought to you by the Center for Poetry at Michigan State University's Residential College in the Arts and Humanities.
Thank you. Current State on WKAR. This story was just too good to leave alone. You've probably heard about this already, but I have to spend a minute on this. A 79-year-old Michigan woman whose first words after emerging from a semi-coma that lasted 5 years were, "I want to go to a Bob Seger concert." She got her wish last night. The Flint Journal reports Evie Brannon cheered, threw her hands up in the air, and danced, 79-year-old woman, during Seger's concert last night at the Palace of Auburn Hills. She also met Bob Seger and his family, talked with the crew and band members, and received VIP treatment for the show. She's from Flint Township. She called the night, quote, "the happiest I've been in a long time." Her story: she came out of a coma May 7th, 2011. Not quite 2 years ago, she had suffered a stroke that led to her becoming a resident of Willowbrook Manor's long-term care unit. She could not speak, move, or eat on her own for 5 years, came out of the coma, and was dancing in the aisles last night at the Palace of Auburn Hills for Bob Seger. Beautiful story. Had to stir that up this morning. The third annual Capital City Film Fest will showcase 70 films, which range from fantasy drama, which slip between parallel universes, to documentaries about pursuing a minimalist lifestyle. Capital City Film Festival director Dominic Cochran and festival coordinator Payal Ravani joined film producer Nathaniel I to discuss this weekend's event. Welcome to Current State, one and all.
Thank you for having us.
Good to see you. How does this film festival here, Dominic, how does the Capital City Film Festival differ from others that our listeners might be aware of?
The most easily identifiable difference is that we think that music is such a huge part of films that our film festival has a soundtrack too. Every single night of our festival, we have concerts to cap off the evening.
So it's almost, to reduce it to a film festival is almost an oversimplification for what this is all about. You've invested
Indeed.
In the musical dimension of movies.
Absolutely.
And that was your idea or what?
We have an amazing group of 100% volunteer organizers, and that was something that we're big fans of the South by Southwest Festival.
Okay.
So we're not ashamed to say that that's kind of the model.
For our listeners
Austin,
who don't
Texas.
Know about that, tell us a little bit about it.
It's a festival that takes place in Austin, Texas, and that's something they kind of pioneered, was combining film and music. And so that's something that we thought that Lansing could use.
For decades, movies have exposed millions and millions of people to great music. I think you're onto something there, you know?
I
mean, who amongst us hasn't bought a film soundtrack because we were so blown away by the music? I own quite a few. So tonight you're featuring the AFI Directing Workshop for Women. Talk to us about this and explain why it was important to include this group of films in your festival.
That was one of those happy accidents. We were receiving submissions from some of these women that had gone through the program individually, so they would produce their films as part of the program, and then they were submitting them to our festival, and we just recognized the pattern. And we said, well, these films are really strong, and it's great, and women, of course, are criminally underrepresented in the film industry. So we just decided, why not reach out to the American Film Institute and make this an ongoing thing? So that's a partnership that we created that we hope to continue. But that last year, that was actually some of our strongest work that we showed was part of that film block. So we highly recommend not missing that.
Payal Ravani, why don't you weigh in here? This directing workshop contains short films. You'll also feature short films throughout of the festival. What's your take on what you have to offer?
Well, we definitely have the most diverse and exciting lineup this year. So the shorts blocks are very strong this year, but we also have quite a few features that sort of touch on every emotional note. We have a film tomorrow that's directed by Michel Gondry called The We and the I. He was the director of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless
yes,
Mind.
Yes, that's right. With Spike Jonze, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
continue.
So we're really looking forward to that one. Tonight we actually have another feature that's sort of a little more lighthearted called Somebody Up There Likes Me. It's just a film about two guys who are in love with the same woman. So And on Sunday, we have a couple documentaries that are also very strong. Of Two Minds, we have the producer, Doug Blush, who will be there in attendance for a discussion following the film. And our closing night film is going to be pretty fun, too. It's called It's a Disaster. So if that gives you any...
I want to witness a disaster. Yes, that's the place. Nathaniel Ides, a local guy. You're a producer of a short called Hollywood and Hammer. The film is about the God of Thunder, Thor, in Los Angeles, and he's a street performer. This is set in the current day, and he's not very good at it. Here's a clip.
So, Thor, no disrespect, but I've noticed you're, kind of struggling out there. I thought maybe I'd show you some karate and moves. Yeah, what? Let me get some attention out there.
Asa Thor of the Thunder does not need to resort to such cheap tactics.
What if I told you I made 85 big ones with those moves in a single day?
I don't know, man. That type of money will buy a lot of yogurt.
I do like yogurt.
Nathaniel Ide, tell us a little bit more about the concept behind this film.
Well, first of all, it's about brothers.
Okay.
Both my brothers were in it with me. My mom taught us, you know, we're going to do stuff as a big family. We do it together. So Thor is my older brother, Matt. The other fellow in that scene is a guy who dresses up on the street as a Kiss character. Nobody recognized him, but that was my younger brother, Nick.
Okay.
So these street performers, and if you've ever been on Hollywood Boulevard, these guys are fascinating.
Yeah.
And nuts. And some
fascinating
of
in a nuts kind of way, yeah.
And, I would walk by them every day. I longed to tell a story about them and a story about brothers and a story a little bit about my favorite book, which is called American Gods. And it's about gods in America, modern America, not doing so well because no one believes in them anymore. So it's a little mix of those three concepts.
Your movie is called a guerrilla film. I take it that means because it was made in such a short period of time, just 3 days or so?
Well, we were unarmed, so it was...
Okay.
The guerrilla war style, or guerrilla style filmmaking is, well, in this case, it was unpermitted. And we shot on Hollywood Boulevard with no permits, no legal jurisdiction to be there.
You kind of went Banksy.
We went Banksy. It was so much fun.
Yeah. And you never got any static from anybody?
We got some static. The Jimmy Kimmel guys out front told us they were going to give us some trouble. We said, well,
you were out in front of the studio where the Jimmy Kimmel show was shot?
We were out in front of the Man's Chinese Theater.
Oh, yeah.
We were on Hollywood and Highland. We were mixing our actors with people on the boulevard, with characters, with tourists. The tourists kept trying to tip my brother and my older brother and my younger brother and other cast. And they were like, what do you want me to do? I might want to, now don't take the tip. Well, take a picture.
Have you done other stuff, or is this your debut, or what?
We've been involved. My brother and I have been involved in acting in the episodics, like The Law and Orders in New York and in Los Angeles. We've made other short films that have played the festival circuit. And in 11, we produced... back here in Michigan, I moved back from California to do this, the Elmore Leonard adaptation of his novel Freaky Deaky, which is a feature which is out in the world right now, playing on DVD.
Okay. Payal, part of the film festival is the Fortnite Film Festival, which is kind of a subgenre, I guess, a guerrilla film contest in which filmmakers have a fortnight to shoot and edit a film. What types of films do you get for this competition?
Oh, we get all sorts of films. We had 29 teams enter this year, which was super exciting. And a few of them fell off, didn't return films, but most of them did. And we have some pretty amazing ones. They range from comedy to drama. There's some documentary style, almost, short films, but they're all under 10 minutes, so... it's so interesting to see what these amateur filmmakers can do in a time frame and in a short time frame and how creative they get with the elements that they're required to use. So,
Nathaniel Ide, since you're right off the heels of the Thor movie, do the creative juices flow differently when you're setting aside 3 days to shoot a whole movie?
Some of the best stuff, the best creative stuff, happens within limitations. That's why it's such a great idea. What Capital City
first of all, we're really honored, both my brother and I, are to be a part of that festival, because it's curated well, number one, and number two, they come up with things like that, and something like that is great for an artist or filmmaker, because those limitations spark your creativity.
Dom, what are the standards here for assessing these guerrilla films?
This year we decided to use a large and diverse panel of judges of 20. We had 20 judges.
More than in the past? Is that it?
Yes, and we did that for the reason that we end up with a number of amazing films. We also end up with a number of, you might say, hilariously bad films.
And they're very entertaining for the wrong reasons.
So
is that it?
We have to dilute those people that give a high score to a movie that might be unintentionally funny. So that's why we use a large panel of 20. And we just simply instructed them to rate the film as far as their own likability on a scale of 1 to 10. And we just went by the numbers, and that's all we did. No discussion or anything.
Before we go any further, where does this happen?
Well, all over Lansing is where they're shooting. Okay. Actually, all over the state. I'm sorry. The only requirement is that one of the key creative people has to be from Michigan.
No, I mean the festival itself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we use venues all throughout the city. We try to repurpose some old urban venues into becoming theaters, which I think is a really fun part of our festival.
Yeah, we actually don't use any traditional theater spaces for screening films.
So where's the strangest place you're showing a film this weekend?
Probably the old temple building. It's a former church.
Sure.
And then it became a nightclub for a while. And we bring in a lot of really cool lighting and pipe and drape and make it look like when you walk in, it kind of has a lot of a wow factor.
How many separate venues will you be showing films at?
Showing films at five different venues.
Five, but we got the music component as well. Okay.
Yes. And that happens every night at the Loft.
Every night at the Loft. And where can people learn more about this before we go any further? What's your website?
CapitalCityFilmFest.com.
CapitalCityFilmFest.com. I want to talk about Holy Motors. I watched the trailer for this, and I need to watch it a few more times to get my head around this. This is a film, a French-German fantasy drama in which the main character travels in a white limousine between parallel lives. What made you want to bring this film to a Lansing audience?
One of the biggest goals we have as a festival is bringing films that you would never see in any other venue. I mean, so when we look to curate the festival, we look for films that might be a little off the wall sometimes or unusual, and Holy Motors fits that bill to a T. I mean, it is one of the most surreal films that you might ever see, and it's visually fantastic. I mean, the cinematography is amazing, and we think it's really entertaining, too. We love that film.
I was intrigued by Detropia. This is a documentary film which looks at the decline of Detroit. I think a lot of people in mid-Michigan are going to be interested in this. What are you hoping the audience will take away from viewing a film like Detropia?
One of the reasons why there's been three or four major documentaries that were filmed in or about Detroit in the last 2 years. Detropia was one that we selected because they purposely tried to avoid the ruin porn kind of thing that you hear, that's actually a term now.
Ruin porn?
Ruin porn, meaning like just focusing on the decline and just on the empty buildings and just doing drive-by shots of the most burned out areas.
Sure.
That's an easy way out for a filmmaker. So Detropia focuses more on the stories and the people. There are some bright spots in the film, too. Not just about the decline.
Oh, yeah.
It's about the seeds of rebirth that are going on in Detroit, too.
Nathaniel Ide, you grew up in East Lansing. What's it like to be showing your film back here?
I love it here, first of all. I spent from 93 until 2010 outside of the state on each one of the coasts. Came back in 2010, and it's just been a series of great discoveries, cultural things like this. The appetite that people have for culture and art and good art, it shouldn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me because Lansing, East Lansing, capital city, university town, it has all those drivers. It's just a great cocktail for humanity.
A great cocktail for humanity. Coming from a guy with a Mustang ball cap. You gotta love that. This cutting-edge filmmaker is wearing a Ford Mustang cap. Payal Ravani, tell us a little bit more about the musical dimension here. What's happening at the Loft then?
So we bring in some really cool bands to perform at this festival, closing out every night. Last night we had a couple of California indie rock bands close out the opening night. Tonight we have more of an ambient alternative band playing called Lydia. Tomorrow night we're actually doing sort of a mid-Michigan showcase. We have some great local bands performing at the Loft. It's an EP release for one of the bands, so it should be pretty exciting.
Excellent.
And then our closing night show, which we've made free actually and open to the public, we're featuring a band called Tortured Soul, and this band plays live house music, so it's sort of soul, jazz, dance music.
Okay.
And they perform all over the world in nightclubs, and they have such an incredible sound, and we're so excited to have them here at the film festival.
CapitalCityFilmFestival.com is the website. Visit it to find out more. It runs through Sunday. Festival organizers Payal Ravani and Dominic Cochran, film producer Nathaniel Ide, thank you all. And to take us out, we have music from one of the bands who will be playing as part of the festival on Sunday. This is Tortured Soul's track, Did You Miss Me?
Yeah, I've been gone for so long, but did you miss me? Home all by yourself. Could you wait to kiss me? Or did you find somebody else when you got lonely? Was I always on your mind? Still the one and only? Yeah, I've been gone for so long, but did you miss me? Home all by yourself? Could you wait to kiss me? Or did you find somebody?
Current State returns with a great lineup of segments here on Monday. MLive's Angela Whitrock visits us to talk about business and the economy, and we'll have more. Reach us at currentstate@wkar.org and call us 517-353-5000 with your contribution. I'm Mark Bayshore.